Science.
And justice. How are they interconnected? And what are the implications of this connection for each one of us? For me, it began at the beginning, the time when the lens through which I viewed the world was created. I was baptized a Catholic before my first birthday, before I was able to make my own decisions about religion. I attended a Catholic school. I had my first communion. I attended weekly CCD classes, and I was literally slapped in the face as part of the confirmation ritual that I participated in at 12 years old. This is when I was bestowed the official title of a soldier of God. Christ and God were synonymous in the Catholic Church. There was no questioning of this one fact, ever. For those who did not grow up Catholic, CCD is the confraternity of Christian doctrine that was an association established in Rome in 1562 for the purpose of providing religious education, mostly for children. I attended CCD all the way through high school. And as a child, I ardently petitioned my parents to allow me to attend public school. It didn't come easily. Both of my parents went to and graduated from Catholic school. In Catholic school, we spent a lot of time on penmanship, spelling, reading, and arithmetic. But there wasn't much, if anything, shared about science or justice. Science was something that was dabbled in, kind of like magic. It was taboo and really not to be trusted. The same was true of the justice work of the 1960s. John and Bobby Kennedy were Catholics, and when they died, it was a great loss for the Catholic Church. I vaguely remember clips and shards of news about the unrest in the South caused by the militant Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. I was too young to know any better. I was 7 when he died. The news seemed far away, something to avert my attention from, and yet I felt the fear that permeated our household. In 1968, for numerous reasons, maybe partially that the Catholic school was in the city, I began attending Stonehenge Elementary School, the public school within walking distance from my parents' home. I was in the 3rd grade, and things were different at Stonehenge. Yes, it was called Stonehenge. We did not start the day with Mass, which was a big shocker. There weren't gruesome crucifixes hanging in classrooms or hallways. There weren't any nuns regaled in full habit with a rope tied around their waist with big knots on it that they like to whap you with on occasion, and more crucifixes hanging around their necks. In this new school, I marveled as we studied science, the science of volcanoes and weather, learned about dinosaurs, holy moly, something I'd never heard of before. I was shocked that we stood for the Pledge of Allegiance instead of bowing our heads for the morning prayer. There were women teachers with their heads uncovered, which just blew my mind. And for the first time, I felt like God wasn't watching me from the secret spy cams in the countless crucifixes posted as a reminder of his suffering for my benefit everywhere. I felt free to follow my inquisitive nature, and follow it I did. My parents tolerated it mostly. During a weekly outing to the local public library with my parents, I found and checked out a very influential book. Don't ask me why. The Origin of Species by Charles Darwin. I looked through the drawings, and read the book, and I felt as if I were uncovering some big secret or blasphemy that had been kept from me for many years. Darwin's theory of evolution is the widely held notion that all life is related and is descended from a common ancestor. That made sense. But the birds and the bananas and the fishes and the flowers all related? Darwin's general theory presumes the development of life from non-life and stresses a purely naturalistic, undirected descent with modification. That is, complex creatures evolve from more simplistic ancestors naturally over time. In a nutshell, as random genetic mutations occur within an organism's genetic code, the beneficial mutations are preserved because they aid to survival, a process known as natural selection. While Darwin's theory of evolution is a relatively young archetype, the evolutionary worldview itself is as old as antiquity. Ancient Greek philosophers postulated the development of life from non-life and the evolutionary descent of man from animal. Charles Darwin simply brought something new to an old philosophy, a plausible mechanism called natural selection. As you might imagine, for a young Catholic girl who sang and played guitar in the Catholic folk group band and who was about to be confirmed as a soldier of God, I was both in shock and intrigued. Where was God's miracle in Darwin's theses? Where was the creation of Adam and Eve from his rib and all the animals spontaneously appearing? We were descended from apes? My mind was being blown open to a world without the threat beyond CCD of sin or damnation. The nuns at that time were playing Jesus Christ Superstar, and I was confused because was Christ really a rebel with his pacifist ways? I was never taught anything about the Bible in CCD, which I find interesting. It was completely foreign to me. After Superstar, I began to read it as a way to better understand this religion that was part of my life. I realized that much of it was mythology, and I realized that on my own. And it was contained in stories of the Bible and the validity of scientific method and the importance of social justice didn't exist. But how could I connect through science to the real world? And how was it changing me and my worldview? Clearly, there was some knowledge to gain and some leaps to make in middle and high school. I was on a journey. This month, our theme is all about justice. And to better understand what justice is, I had to think back into my life, like how I got here. What hurdles did I launch myself over to uncover where and how the interconnections of science and justice merged and what part Catholicism played in it all? Because clearly it has. How and why I left Catholicism, spurred on by the saying, and this saying I saw on the wall of the sanctuary in a Catholic church, seek the truth and the truth shall set you free. Seek the truth and the truth shall set you free. Painted in gold leaf, prominently. What were they telling this young Catholic girl? My journey of discovery, fueled by all of this influx of experience, truly began when my next-door neighbor, Patty Bernozzi, a girl 2 years older than I, offered to take me to the teen center in the town that I lived in. My parents relented, as they often did, and I had the opportunity to meet some new friends, and I was invited to what seemed like random vignettes into various experiences. Through this non-denominational teen center, I connected with the Syracuse Peace Council, where people gathered with the intention of doing the right thing, regardless of race, regardless of religion, regardless of identity. I got involved with the No Nukes movement and was seated with the idea that there could be viable alternatives to the energy crisis of the 1970s. It was during this time that I learned that there were people who had less. There were people who were poor. There were people who were treated poorly. And I learned that the Catholic Church and our government were not always the good guys. Religion and history, written by the winners, became suspect to me. While science was this unfolding theory of certainty, I moved away from the religion of my parents and moved towards the justice and science of my peers. This was the beginning of the new lack of faith movement that I was involved in. During the same time, Unitarianism and Universalism were two radically spiritual communities that were open to the importance of justice in human interactions. Each denomination stood up for what was right and opposed profit over people, which was really the mantra of the 1980s, that is, profit over people. Unitarianism and Universalism partnered in 1961 and reimagined what they brought to the front lines of social justice with the burning of draft cards as well as bras and the fight for civil rights across this country. There was a story and is a story that is told about the Reverend Dana Greeley, who is the president of the newly formed Unitarian and Universalist Association, who received a call from the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, who asked him, Dana, will you come? Will you come and march over this bridge with us? Will you come? We need you. And the Board of Trustees were meeting at the time, and everyone got in their cars and drove and called everybody from across the country to join them, and they did. It was obvious that universal love had a large part in this, and that the Unitarians, leaning towards scientific theology, I like to call it, and humanism, we needed one another. Thus, they became an association of congregations, not a religion, not a religion. These white meeting houses in the center of town greens became gathering places. People who wanted to work for change would gather here. If one were progressive, smart, and inclined to rally for justice, they were most likely a Unitarian Universalist or a Quaker. If you were fighting for civil rights and wanted to be taken seriously, you were most likely a Unitarian Universalist or a Baptist. If you were a humanist and a transcendentalist, an atheist or agnostic, if you were part of a multi-faith family that was not accepted into other religious communities and wanted to be part of a solution for change, you were most likely a Unitarian Universalist. If you were LGBTQ and had the need for a community of like-minded activists, then you were a Unitarian Universalist. There were so many different reasons that people found their way to Unitarian Universalism, beginning with the desire to raise thoughtful, mindful children with an understanding of the world's religions and the knowledge to make good decisions about the future of this collective experiment that we call a republic. Children were and are still taught in Unitarian Universalist congregations across this country to be thinkers, to be seekers, to be doers, affirmed in their own experience, no creed, but their own experience, an understanding of religious concepts such as mission, faith, grace, and God. Creed is not something to blindly follow. It is something to deconstruct, understand, evolve, and to embrace without a sense of fear of falling from grace. I only wish that my parents could have broken free from their familial chains that bound them and that they found Unitarian Universalism. I am unsure how I made this leap to save my life, but I'm glad that I did. How did I get from singing in the Catholic Church folk band to a teen center to a place as a justice-seeking liberal agent for change? What I've realized over the years is that it was Darwin's survival of the fittest that changed my and possibly humankind's understanding of being a part of an ever-evolving world. Humankind heard the call for the survival of the fittest, and thus we sought to become the fittest. We heeded the Old Testament teaching that explained that we were stewards of this earth, but more especially the part that taught us that we were to have dominion over all creatures, great and small. That we were stewards of the planet and all of its resources, and somewhere along the line, we extrapolated the right to exploit this planet for our own needs. Maybe it was during the energy crisis of the 1970s that we realized that we could no longer continue to ignore the planet and exploit her for what she was worth. This is our and a whole lot of other species' home, after all. Science started to explain to us the consequences of our actions with numbers and charts and real data about how our climate was changing and how species were and are going extinct on a daily basis. We started to see how we were not distinct from all other species. We were not really all that special. But how much we rely on the bees to help cultivate our food supply, and wolves, and how they're needed to cull deer that eat so much grass, and how plastic and carbon are quickly killing our oceans. Science is helping us to understand. Science, an ever-evolving practice of observation and interaction, has shown us our responsibility and the consequences of our actions, where the religion of our fathers and mothers has not given us reliable guidance. Yet when I think about the New Testament and the addition of the Jesus teachings of peace, of justice, of compassion, of loving kindness, loving our neighbor as ourself, I see the course correction that has not quite reached the hearts and minds of our brothers and sisters and others. We need to listen to and develop a whole new understanding of family, of tribe, of community, and cross-species cooperation. Rebecca Adamson, American Indian rights activist, shared her thoughts, which called me to the importance of the connection between science and social justice. She shared that the indigenous understanding has its basis of spirituality in a recognition of interconnectedness and interdependence of all living things, a holistic and balanced view of the world. All things are bound together. All things connect. What happens to the earth happens to the children of the earth. Humankind is not woven the web of life. We are but one thread. Whatever we do to the web, we do to ourselves. Her teaching is the same teaching of our seventh principle, which explains that we are all connected in an interdependent web of all existence. Do we believe this? My journey from infancy through religion and education into justice making has brought me to a deep understanding of this teaching. Sages such as the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King brought me words to explain my hopes. Let our children be judged by the content of their character. By the content of their character. Not by how they look. Not by where they live. Not by where they go to school. Not by what car they're dropped off in. By the content of their character. King is a major reason that I chose to become a Unitarian Universalist. And ultimately, a minister. Realizing that what we each do has far-reaching, rippling consequences. My friends, the debate is over. And yet we have a hard time realizing how we affect one another on the most basic of levels. And yet we know in our heart of hearts that we do. We see cooperation in other species, in bees and butterflies and birds and predator animals who take the weakest of the herd. There is competition within a species as well as a sense of cooperation within a species and across species lines. That is a science of survival. It is a science that we as humans would do well to learn and imitate on the most basic of levels. That is what I recognize as the science of justice, that we have a responsibility to acknowledge and secure our very survival and the survival of one another and the survival of every single being on this planet. In places like Standing Rock with regard to water rights, in Alaska with regard to land rights, and around this country and this world in wildlife sanctuaries and neighborhoods where beings are denied their most basic of rights, the right to survive. I got in this debate the other day about survival and the right to survive and survival of the fittest. And it's interesting to think that we as a species believe that the fittest are the ones that survive, that, you know, genetically the strongest survive. And here's the reality, just like the screw in this morning's story for all ages, it takes us all, each one of us, even the ones we don't see, to make the wagon move, to make us all survive. There is a saying that reminds me, and I turn, and in turn I remind us, that science without religion is lame, and that religion without science is blind. It is up to us, my friends, to mend our ways, to call our brethren to do the same. And if we change our ways, we will no longer need to exploit this planet and our species for more profit. There is no one else that will make the stand that we need to make. Profit has blinded those in power. That is just a plain fact. And many have forgotten that we are all needed in good health to make the wheels of true compassionate progress turn. I ask us, as we contemplate justice this month, how did you get here to this moment? What is your story? What is your journey? What has formed you? What made you arrive to First Parish? And in that, the next question is, what will you do with this one precious life? I invite us to take a few moments in silent reflection and prayer. For this we pray, may it be so. Amen.